Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. We're going to open today circling back to the Umbrella Center for Domestic Violence Services, which is serving thousands of families in Greater New Haven and the Naugatuck Valley. We'll discuss the all-important preventative tool, the community outreach and education that the agency provides, its Hope Family Justice Center, and how to help by participating in the 2021 Strength for Survivors Challenge. Then we're going to visit with Scarlett Lewis, founder of the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement, to get the latest news on this global social emotional learning initiative and how you can participate all through February at home, at school, at work, or in your community. February is Choose Love Awareness Month, and we'll tell you how to get involved. Then we're closing hearing about how well our state is doing protecting the members of our LGBTQ communities from discrimination, especially compared to other states. We're going to bring in the legal director for the Human Rights Campaign to talk about why Connecticut is doing so well and what we could do better as we unpack the organization's 7th National State Equality. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Did you know Resources Incorporated is committed to improving communities through the dignity of work? In a typical year, Connecticut taxpayers save over $8 million due to the NBRI clients while reducing their dependence on government support. So how can CRI help you? Knowing that all job seekers need solid computer skills, CRA's one-stop system in southwestern Connecticut uses Microsoft's digital literacy curriculum to ensure your foundational computing skills are strong. Every month's schedule of free coaching is outlined in the monthly Bridgeport American Job Center calendar. Check it out now at ajcswct.com. Well, I was thinking as I was getting ready to tape the program, I should say tape, record the program this morning on this fancy digital platform that we have here that isn't always as cooperative as the tape recorder I used to use back well over a quarter century ago when I got to know what was then the Umbrella organization, now the Umbrella Center for Domestic Violence Services, a division of BH Care, serving the greater Naugatuck Valley area with an incredibly diverse and responsive program of domestic and family violence services. And I'm so pleased to be here today, sadly not promoting the bowl to benefit, but excited to be promoting a brand new COVID era initiative with my guests representing the Umbrella Center and BH Care. Jessica Holman is my brand new friend. She is a coordinator for community education interns for the Umbrella Center. And Daniel is with us. I've gotten to know her over the past couple of years. She's development coordinator, along with another long list of other titles and accomplishments as she supports the Umbrella Center as well as the Hope Family Justice Center. We'll be talking about both of those, as well as Strength for Survivors, a 14-day challenge that's going to honor victims and survivors of domestic violence and support in the coming weeks. We're going to tell you all about that. But first, let's go to Danielle. Danielle, good morning. Thanks for joining us. And sorry about the little technical snafus we've been having here. Gremlins in the machine this morning, Danielle. I'm sorry about that.
No problem. Thank you so much for having us so we can talk about the event and our services.
Yeah.
We are really excited. I'm sure the year in a row, but excited that we are sort of pivoting and shifting with our current situation, and we'll still be doing something that can, you know, like you said, empower people, raise awareness of domestic violence, raise awareness of our services, and then support the programs that we provide for about 8,000 people a year towns.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a brief and stumbling error, if you could remind folks that are listening all over the place how long tenured this is that umbrella, the now known Umbrella Center, has been providing. It has been decades, and this organization really was on the forefront of developing domestic and family violence response in the greater Naugatuck Valley oh so many years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, we actually are sort of a unified front of domestic violence services. So there was a New Haven group, there was a Valley group, and we combined forces, I want to say less than 10 years ago and more than seven. So pardon my fuzziness of our history, but we came together and we merged our Valley forces and our New Haven and Shoreline forces together to create the Umbrella Center for Domestic Violence Services.
And I was going to say that that created a fantastic resource network for the community mm-hmm. served by both the entities. I mean, a lot of times you look at mergers as a bailout move. This really was a strengthening, a community building and strengthening move that that turned out really, really well in the ensuing 5 or 6 years, right?
Yeah, I mean, they say strengths in numbers. We're part of the CCDAV coalition, so we're able to sort of pool our resources together and advocate for people on just such a larger level. And so we do serve 19 towns from the shoreline as far as Madison all the way down to Shelton and everything in between. And, you know, that's our area. And that's not, you know, that means that there are about 18 or 19 other domestic violence providers in the state of Connecticut that have taken on other various territories. Mm. Because the need for domestic violence services is just, unfortunately, so high. And so we cover, you know, 19 towns. And last year, we actually sheltered just under 250 women and children in two of our safe houses. That's wow. just for those 19 towns. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unfortunately, the need for these services is always ongoing. And it's particularly prevalent now during the pandemic with a lot of the lockdowns and limitations and restrictions for where people can go.
Right. Well, I was going to say, we talked a lot in previous visits with your organization, you know, about the way you're responding to the individuals who have been victimized. But we don't do enough to promote the work that the Umbrella Center does in terms of prevention. And that's where Jessica Holman comes in. As we said in the intro, she's the coordinator for community education and interns, along with a number of other things. Jessica, let's give Danielle a break and just spend a few minutes talking a little bit about how you have seen the community education that you are providing through, you know, various workshops, through the school districts, through the judicial system, perhaps even to law enforcement providers, how that work is making a difference in reducing the after effect. It is mitigating the violence and at least hopefully you know, controlling the exponential increase in victims who are then tapping kind of the other side of the umbrella services, and that is the protection response, the judicial support and family support.
Yeah, thank you so much for bringing up prevention. I think it's a really important piece of our mission. Of course, our mission is to really create an environment that supports individual safety. And we see that through all of our crisis intervention work, which is really important life-saving work. But I feel really privileged and lucky to have the opportunity as a community educator to kind of work on that part of our mission towards breaking the cycle of domestic violence. So our goal is that we're going to empower young people, high school students, college students. We serve so many amazing institutions of higher education across those 19 cities and towns. So it's really my privilege to be able to talk to young people about bystander intervention. How do we safely and effectively intervene if someone in our life is experiencing harm? We also talk about media literacy. Let's think critically about how relationships are portrayed in the media, and also really just building skills for healthy relationships, not just intimate relationships, but really thinking about healthy friendships, healthy relationships, even kind of how to be a healthy teammate. So I have the privilege of really working with primary prevention, working to create an environment where youth will never need our crisis intervention services. But of course, we know that there are lots of survivors in our community who are experiencing harm. And so it is my privilege to, again, be able to work with different healthcare providers, social service providers, different folks in our community who may come in contact with survivors of domestic violence and various roles that they hold. A particular area of focus for us since the start of the pandemic has been outreach to healthcare professionals, really empowering healthcare professionals to have conversations about screening for domestic violence. And if folks respond that they are experiencing harm, then also making sure that we're empowering those survivors with resources and thinking holistically about the impact of domestic violence on their health.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but I'm not able to be in person. But I've really had the opportunity to engage with not only healthcare professionals who are currently working in the field, but also with nursing students at Southern Connecticut State University, physician's assistants at Quinnipiac University, and lots of future healthcare professionals that will enter the field with the skills to really screen and make appropriate referrals for domestic violence survivors.
Yeah, the recruitment, the initiation of recruitment of frontline medical workers as sort of the first line of defense and definition in qualifying and identifying domestic and family violence in the victims is relatively new, and it's great to hear that Umbrella Center is on the forefront of that training. But we've got a couple of minutes. I cannot let you go, Jessica or Danielle, without talking about the Hope Family Justice Center. Just give us a minute or two on what the latest developments are with that component of BH Care, the sister service to the Umbrella Center.
Absolutely. The Hope Family Justice Center is a partner of the the Umbrella Center for Domestic Violence Services is a partner of the Hope Family Justice Center. And we found since the start of the pandemic that our clients' needs have really increased, right? When we see financial hardship and different challenges that the pandemic has created, we really need that coordination and wraparound services for survivors of domestic violence. So all of the services offered by Umbrella and also by the Hope Family Justice Center are free and confidential. But the Hope Family Justice Center is really a coordination of community-based services, kind of addressing all of the different needs that a survivor may have, which includes case management, looking for employment assistance, housing and shelter, financial literacy, the opportunity to meet with law enforcement, to seek legal assistance. Even though we're working remote, we're really able to provide connection to clinical and behavioral health and physical health services to ensure that survivors have all of the different care and support that they need to really rebuild a safer life for themselves and their children.
Great. Thanks, Jessica. Let's switch back to Danielle Morphy, Development Coordinator, to talk about how the underwriting for all of these services, all of this outreach, all of this support happens. And that comes down to you. And we've got 14 days to make it happen with the Strength for Survivors event. Danielle, give us the high points of that and how folks can get involved.
Sure. So this event is a 14-day challenge. We're starting on Saturday, March 13th. Each morning you'll be emailed a challenge to perform. And it will be from physical to mindful to creative. It doesn't have to be like you doing, you know, a thousand crunches in 14 days or squats or push-ups. There'll be certain tiered levels so anybody at any like age or mobility can participate. But what we want you to do is have your friends and family sponsor you during this challenge so that we can raise awareness and raise funds for our services. This is our only fundraiser for the entire year. So we've extended it to 14 days versus that one-day bowling event, which was, you know, a total blast.
Sure.
But,
14
you know,
hours.
We're making do. It was, yes, it was 14 hours.
Yeah, so now you're doing 14 days. That's you know, great.
Exactly. And, you know, we want you to brag. We want you to brag about the challenge that you do. Maybe one day each challenge will be connected to a statistic. So, you know, one day it could be 20 push-ups for
20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. So the goal of this challenge is to really honor those people who are being harmed, really hold space for people who may not have other people really knowing the challenges or struggles that they're going through.
Great. Well, let's close by just letting people know where they need to go for more information to either learn more about Umbrella or get involved in the challenge.
Sure. So to get involved in the challenge and to learn more about Umbrella, you can go to s4s.bhcare.org. And that four is the number four. So it's s4s.bhcare.org. And you can sign up, you can donate, you can create a team, you can donate to a team or just make a net donation for the event. And as we get closer, there will be plenty of information updated on the site. And you can also check us out on Facebook. If you type in UCDVS, you'll find us on Facebook as well.
Yep, UCDVS for the Umbrella Center for Domestic Violence Services, providing support for nearly 8,000 people a year just in the greater Naugatuck Valley and greater New Haven areas alone. In the past year, this organization has sheltered 224 women and children in safe houses and provided countless hours of assistance and support from prevention, I should say, Jessica, to education, to outreach, judicial support, personal and financial support. I can't say enough about this organization, and they need your help. s4s.bhcare.org. Strength for Survivors is the 14-day challenge. We want you to take it to help the Umbrella Center. You'll be hearing a lot more about it here on our radio stations in the coming weeks. We hope you'll sign up. I want to thank Jessica Holman, the coordinator for community education and interns and many other functions, as well as Danielle Morphy, development coordinator serving the Umbrella Center for Domestic Violence Services and BH Care. Thank you both for being part of the show this morning, and we wish you good luck on this new initiative here in the COVID era. Well, we are so pleased to once again be the guest of Scarlett Lewis, who is the founder of the Jesse Love Choose Love movement. Jesse Lewis, in case you haven't heard from our previous programs with Scarlett, was a six-year-old first grader and a victim at the Sandy Hook tragedy, whose actions saved the lives of nine classmates. Jesse left behind a message on a household chalkboard, which I believe is still within just a few feet to my right.
Yep.
And it says, nurturing, healing, love. And that became the inspiration for his mom, Scarlett, to find the Choose Love movement. It honors Jesse by providing no-cost, absolutely free social, emotional learning, and character development programs. Its seventh annual SEL Choose Love Awareness Month starts tomorrow, February 1st, and is promoting hope, healing, and connection through social-emotional learning. It's going to honor six-year-old Jesse, and we're going to tell you about it. Scarlett, thanks for having us at the house again.
Oh, thank you so much, John.
So let's just remind folks of the backstory and how this all started and has virtually erupted and taken over the world. I mean, 10,000 plus 11,000 schools you're in now. The book, the movement is really, really making a difference in tens of thousands of lives,
millions
of lives, not just students, but their families and entire communities. We're going to be talking all about that. But let's talk about those humble beginnings for just a few moments.
Yeah, thank you, John. This started following the murder of my six-year-old son at Sandy Hook Elementary School. And I came home to this little farmhouse that I have in Sandy Hook, and I found this message that Jesse had written on our kitchen chalkboard, as you alluded to, nurturing, healing, love. And I knew that if the shooter, who was a former student whose mother had taught at the school, had been able to give and receive nurturing, healing, love, the tragedy would never have happened. And so my research into being part of the solution, and I knew that that's what I would have to dedicate my life doing, because every school shooting is 100% preventable, led me to social and emotional learning. And that is essential life skills, like being able to have healthy relationships and meaningful connections, being able to manage our emotions, resilience and responsible decision-making, just to name a few, growth mindset, really important in the environment that we're in right now. And these skills and tools we're not born with, but we can learn, and they're pretty simple to learn, and we use them for the rest of our lives. And they really are a direct path to flourishing with so much research behind the benefits. And so I started the movement to ensure that every child received access to what we know is in their best interest.
Well, as we said, February 1st marks the beginning of the 7th annual Choose Love Movement Month. And I wanted to just say that although it seems that the movement has sort of doubled or maybe even tripled exponentially each year since this whole thing started, can you identify one or two really important benchmarks at points in the 7-year process when things really, really started taking off? Was it acknowledgement on a state level, on a national level? Could you put your finger on any particular incidents or accidents that actually helped really, really gain traction for the movement?
Well, I noticed that the programming that was in place, even in Sandy Hook, I was told had never gotten out of the box because the district wasn't able to afford to train all of the teachers. So I went to the drawing board, created a program that didn't require teacher training, that was free. And I think, so it took a few years to develop a program that encompassed everything that kids would need. And then we had our courageous leaders, a few schools across the country in different states that adopted the program, either classroom, school, or district-wide, and then had incredible results. So it started spreading by word of mouth. This is really a grassroots movement. So we have had steady increases year over year, and it's by word of mouth because the program works and it has been transforming and saving lives. And really, that's how we've grown.
Folks, at this point, I just want to remind you that we're in person with Scarlett, but practicing appropriate distancing. So we're utilizing some equipment that may sound a little weird this morning. As far as I'm sitting in Scarlett's kitchen, putting a stick across her kitchen table, 6 feet away to speak with her. So hopefully, we're getting all this important information to you. But let's talk about jumping the pond and the Jesse Lewis Choose Love movement, and also the traction that you're starting to see beyond the United States, because this is really becoming a global thing.
It is. I mean, we're all connected as human beings by the want and need to love and be loved. Love literally is connection. And in this world of social distancing, it really goes against the grain of what we need as human beings. And so we have seen tremendous growth. I think we're now in over 112 countries. Most recently, Choose Love Japan, which is really exciting. We are planning a global virtual conference, and it's a bridge that where we can all meet as human beings. And that is with love.
Yeah, you really point out that critical and important pivot point around which everything flows, and I guess, because love is such a universal concept, even though each individual person conceives it differently in their own head, in their own soul, in their own heart, it really must be very easy to make inroads successfully in non-English speaking or foreign communities because of that kind of universal understanding. Is it being embraced the same way in your various neighborhoods of the world as it was here throughout the United States?
That's a great point, John, but in essence, there's so much research now, in fact, decades behind the benefits of cultivating connection and compassion, not only in schools as part of the culture. In fact, it's the number one way to have a safe school, but also obviously in homes, communities, and now businesses. So there are minor adjustments that are made to the program, but overwhelmingly it remains pretty consistent. We have a formula for choosing love, and the formula is courage plus gratitude plus forgiveness plus compassion in action equals choosing love. And, you know, as human beings, we all have things that happen to us that we would prefer not to have happened, that we don't choose, but we can take our personal power back in our thoughtful response. We're all the same in that. And you can do that through this formula. And so it has really given so many people across the world relief from physical, mental, and emotional pain, help them be more in control of their lives and literally become victors rather than victims.
Yeah. And I really think it was you who educated me the first time that some of the largest strides right off the block at the beginning of the social emotional learning movement itself did not start in the United States. They were started in other countries. So, but you were talking about the formula for choosing love, courage, gratitude, forgiveness, compassion, and action. Each of those pillars is going to be the focus of one of the 4 weeks of February, Choose Love Month. So let's talk about how you are going to be helping to facilitate the application. I mean, each of those subjects you could probably spend a year on in a school curriculum. How do you cultivate the highest and most important points of each of those things and package them in a way that they still remain important and effective, but that they can all be done sort of in the larger framework of time that's available, especially if it's being taught in school situations?
Well, in a school situation, we recommend that they break up their school year into 4 quarters. The first quarter focusing on courage. Courage is the most important character value because it's the one that underlies all the rest. We practice courage so often, especially in today's world, courage to face our fears instead of resisting, avoiding, numbing, courage to be kind when people aren't being kind to us, courage to speak up, courage to do the right thing and tell the truth. There's so many different ways that we practice courage. And science tells us that we can actually strengthen our courage by practicing the certain skills and tools. So we're going to be rolling those out the first week of February. And then we move into gratitude. Gratitude, everybody's heard of that, but it is so incredibly powerful. It has the power to shift the focus of our minds, of our thinking, of our lens, from negativity and anxiety to being grateful. All these thousands of thoughts that we have that run through our minds every single day, the majority of which, by the way, science tells us are negative and repetitive because of our instinctual negative bias that keeps us safe. We can only focus on one thought at a time. So we can only focus on either a negative, angry, lower energy thought or a grateful thought. So you can use gratitude to switch your train of thought and help you move towards hope, which is, of course, what we all need. There are different ways to practice gratitude. And we have to remember that it's not happiness that makes us grateful. It's practicing gratitude that makes us happy. So we're going to be focusing our second week on that. Our third week is going to be focused on forgiveness. Forgiveness is a huge part of my healing journey. When I started this movement and people heard that I wanted to put forgiveness in the program, everyone said, oh my gosh, that's way too lofty a topic. Kids won't understand it. They won't be able to practice it. Well, guess what? Actually, forgiveness is kids' favorite character value. And I still can't believe that I say that. But when I ask kids, why do you say forgiveness out of all the character values is your favorite? They say because it's like a superpower. And they say it feels so good to let it go. And science tells us that forgiveness is really one of the most powerful tools towards having healthy relationships. And Harvard University tells us that having meaningful and healthy relationships is the key to happiness. So forgiveness is really big in that. And then that's the third week. And then the fourth week is compassion in action, which is so vitally important to understand, especially during this era of social isolation. Compassion has two components. There's the empathetic component. And sometimes people mix up empathy and compassion. Empathy is when we put ourselves in other people's shoes, and a lot of times that is a painful process. Empathy lights up the same receptors in our brain as physical pain. So we can have empathy burnout and empathy fatigue, erroneously called compassion burnout and fatigue. It's really important to notice the difference. That's why we actually call this character value compassion in action, because science tells us that there's also the action component of compassion. And it's in that component where all of the, I say, the nurturing, healing love that we give out, we get back. So when we practice compassion for each other, that literally strengthens us and gives us more energy, and actually is really a key to our health and well-being as human beings. And this is incredibly all science. And so this practice that we're going to go through during SEL Awareness Month is going to empower us. It's going to make us healthier. It's going to strengthen our immune systems. And that's all science. It's pretty exciting.
A crash course in learning how to make the world better, no matter where you are, how old you are, or what you do. We're here with Scarlett Lewis, founder of the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement. Their seventh annual SEL Choose Love Awareness Month starts February 1st to promote hope, healing, and connection. We're going to be back in just a couple of moments to talk more about how the movement has pivoted into the COVID era, more of ways to participate in the Choose Love Movement Month activities, as well as a little bit of a deeper dive into how Scarlett and her growing legion of devotees and followers are applying the Choose Love for Schools movement. We'll be right back.
Do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Boquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Access Health CT announced that as of January 2021, nearly 1 million Connecticut residents have enrolled through the state's marketplace. And during the recent annual open enrollment period, almost 105,000 signed up for health insurance into a qualified health plan, and Husky Health enrollment saw a healthy 16% increase from 2019. Connecticut residents can still get coverage if they've experienced a life-changing event like losing coverage due to job loss, moving to the state, getting married, or turning age 26 through a special enrollment period. If you'd like to learn more, just go to accesshealthct.com.
We are back with Scarlett Lewis, founder of the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement. Jesse was a six-year-old first grader at Sandy Hook School and a victim of the tragedy that happened there in 2012. We're very pleased to be here with Scarlett, hearing a lot about how she's going to be applying the four pillars of the Choose Love formula this month in February. But now, here in a COVID era, let's talk a little bit about how you have helped the movement pivot and have developed this brand new Choosing Love in a Brave New World program.
We're really excited about this programming that directly relates to the time that we're in now. I had found myself calling where we are a brave new world, because it truly is. And so we took advantage of the quarantine and me being grounded, because I'm usually flying all over the world, to create brand new programming that directly addresses where we are now for kids. We knew that kids were going to be in, you know, lockdown, and that that really goes against the grain of who we are as human beings, social isolation. And so we created specific lessons that address the issues that kids are facing. And we focused on growth mindset. That's the ability to see challenges and difficulties as opportunities for growth. And so instead of fearing and resisting them, we can look at them and almost with curiosity ask, what are the lessons in there for me? We don't fear them. We know that we can move through them and even grow from them. We focused on post-traumatic growth. As an example of our negative bias, we've all heard of PTSD, and there are a lot of children and adults that are suffering from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, right now. But really, the most common side effect of trauma is post-traumatic growth. This is science. We literally grow through the difficulty in our lives. In fact, that's part of what helps shape and mold us into the human beings we become. And so we want to set up that expectation, because very few of us have actually ever even heard of the term. And so these are all vital lessons, how to come back to the present moment, to understand that you're safe right now. And it's in the present moment where you can choose how to thoughtfully respond to what's going on in your world and take your personal power back. That lowers anxiety. We have this stressor, this external event, COVID, that's happening outside of us, over which we have no control, but we do have control how we thoughtfully respond. And that's how we take our personal power back. All of these lessons, so vitally important for our kids. And this is a program that we offer on our website that is totally free. And I continue to make these programs free for as long as possible. Thank you very much for everybody who has supported us, because I know, and science tells us, that they are so vitally important to the health and well-being of our children in every way. And of course, would have also saved not only my son and the other victims, but also the perpetrators as well.
We touched upon the subject of Choose Love for Schools a little bit earlier. I just want to give you the opportunity to share with educators, principals, Board of Education members, and other school leaders who might be listening how they could adopt that program, whether it starts now during Choose Love Month or at some point in the near future.
Absolutely. You can start this anytime in the school year. And we are now in every single state. In fact, we're the most taught SEL program in a handful of states. And it doesn't stop in the school, which is amazing. We have programs for the home that correlate to what the kids are being taught in schools, as well as communities. And now even businesses. We opened a benefit corporation during quarantine as well, called Choose High Performance. So this is now also offered in businesses as well.
Excellent. All that can be found, along with background, as well as so much more than we could ever fit into our entire hour program, never mind just this midpoint segment. ChooseLoveMovement.org is a website to go to get started wherever you are in the world. And before we go, Scarlett Lewis, quickly review the ways that anyone who's listening can participate in any of the 4 weeks or the entire February Choose Love Awareness Month.
Thank you, John. Well, Jesse left a message for his older brother. It was his last message to his older brother, who was 12 years old at the time, and he said, have a lot of fun. So a lot of the things that we do, we try to shape around that message, because it's vitally important to have a lot of fun. And sometimes when we feel that we're anxious and there's a lot going on in our world and we're a little bit overwhelmed, the fun goes out the window. So we wanted to put a focus of that on that in February. And so please join us on our website, sign up for our newsletter, social media. There's so many different ways that you can take part. We've got videos, we have contests, we have daily challenges. This is for schools, homes, and communities. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I really encourage everyone to take part.
The Jesse Lewis Choose Love Movement honors Jesse, the six-year-old victim at the Sandy Hook tragedy, by providing no-cost, free social, emotional learning, and character development programs. Their seventh annual SEL Choose Love Awareness Month starts February 1st, promoting hope, healing, and connection through social, emotional learning, and honoring Jesse. Find out all you need to know about how to bring Choose Love into your business, into your school, into your community, your neighborhood, your home, your town government, anywhere you are in the world. Go to ChooseLoveMovement.org. Scarlett, thanks for having us. Best of luck throughout February and beyond, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you so much, John.
Regular listeners to the program know how we talk about taking better care of, serving and supporting our LGBTQ communities here in Connecticut. And I was so pleased earlier this week to learn that the Human Rights Campaign Foundation and HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, the nation's largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer civil rights organization, and the Equality Federation Institute released their seventh annual State Equality Index. This SEI is a comprehensive report detailing statewide laws and policies that affect LGBTQ people and their families, and assesses how well states are protecting LGBTQ people from discrimination. Connecticut this year is in the top-rated category, along with a little under a couple dozen other states. That is the category working toward innovative equality. So we're going to find out what all that means, not just for our LGBTQ populations and their loved ones, but the entire state of Connecticut, and why we're such among the leaders here throughout the country, with Sarah Warbelow. She is the legal director for the Human Rights Campaign. Sarah, glad to meet you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So beyond the brief introduction, Sarah, quick kind of orientation about the Human Rights Campaign and how your national and state-by-state work all kind of coalesces.
Thanks for asking. So, you know, the Human Rights Campaign advocates for equality for LGBTQ people, both, you know, sort of at the policy level, but also in communities as well, including individual workplaces, hospitals, and schools. We're trying to create an environment in which LGBTQ folks can go about their daily lives and not fear for themselves and for their families. And so, you know, we push for major pieces of legislation on the federal level, but then, you know, work with individual communities to achieve that security all over the country.
So switching to the State Equality Index, this is the seventh year of this report. And as we indicated, part of the reason why you're on the show is because Connecticut is doing such a good job, at least within the rubric and confines and architecture of this report, mm-hmm. in terms of better protecting our LGBTQ people from discrimination. Back 7 years ago, if you even know, was this a situation where a lot of states had already started off at the very beginning falling into this category? Or do you see where the report, along with all the
other important work that Human Rights Campaign and the Equality Federation are doing, the Institute are doing, has actually impacted how many states have gravitated up into this working toward innovative equality category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Connecticut has been an early leader on equality for LGBTQ folks. But over the course of the 7 years that this report has been put out and sort of some predecessor reports prior to that, we've seen some really significant shifts in the ways that states are adopting laws and policies to protect LGBTQ people. This year alone, you know, we had two states that actually joined that top-ranked group in Hawaii and then your neighbor, New Hampshire.
Very nice. Well, in terms of looking out nationally, I guess a lot of people that are already sort of part of the effort, or at least mindful of the effort of the state on behalf of these communities. When you're looking at some of the states this year that may have fallen into the least responsive category, or the the bottom level of the four versus the top, what are a couple of the most disturbing things that you're seeing that we here in Connecticut might be able to potentially have some influence over just by communicating through our U.S. Congress people and senators?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, we certainly are very concerned that a number of states have been adapting bad laws. So not only are these states, you know, not providing those basic core protections that LGBTQ folks need, non-discrimination in employment, housing, education, right? But they're actually, you know, going backwards, and they are adopting restrictions on their city's ability to adopt their own non-discrimination policies. They are criminalizing people living with HIV and AIDS. They are making it more difficult for people to participate in the foster care system, turning away families, making it legal to turn away families who don't match up with the religion of the agency. And so that would be discriminating not only against LGBTQ folks, but also people of minority religions as well.
Yeah, I'm now scrolling down through some of the bullet points here, and I guess it is an honor for Connecticut to be among the 19 states in that top category, but perhaps more outweighed by the disturbing point that 25 states are in the lowest rated category. It seems that you have your work cut out for you, but refocusing on Connecticut, can you talk a little bit about some of the high point statistics that you're seeing in this year's State Equality Index that has helped Connecticut remain among these top states in affording LGBTQ people and families the best protection from discrimination?
Yeah, you know, Connecticut has gone above and beyond, you know, what people typically think about when they're thinking about LGBTQ equality. You know, again, those protections in education and employment. And Connecticut, you know, has really taken seriously a commitment to transgender people, making it reasonable for trans people to update their gender markers on their driver's licenses and birth certificates, making sure that trans folks have access to medical care. Connecticut's also taken very seriously anti-bullying and anti-bullying laws. You know, not only has the state ensured that sexual orientation and gender identity are within the categories that are covered by anti-bullying law, but also requires model policies and alternative forms of discipline, addressing cyberbullying, and also, you know, measuring that out with the importance of having schools address suicide prevention.
Very good. Are there any, it bears mentioning, I know, has the advent of the COVID era and all of what has happened since the United States and Connecticut has begun working to, you know, mitigate and eliminate this horrible virus, has that had particular impact on the LGBTQ communities here in Connecticut or across the country?
Mm-hmm. Well, the LGBTQ community is among the groups that have been disproportionately impacted by COVID-19, sort of in two different ways. One, LGBTQ folks, as a result of long dealing with discrimination, have a lot of comorbidities that makes them more vulnerable to negative outcomes if they contract COVID. Including things like higher rates of substance abuse, higher rates of obesity, smoking. And so that's been a real challenge for the LGBTQ community. In addition, LGBTQ folks are also overrepresented in some of the professions that have been hard hit. The medical profession, so not so much people losing their jobs in that way, but really being on the front lines of dealing with this crisis. Overrepresented amongst educators who are also on the front lines of trying to support children in schools. And then with respect to the restaurant and retail, where people are disproportionately losing jobs.
Turning back to exclusively Connecticut in the last couple minutes that we have with you, Sarah, could you speak to anything that you see based on Connecticut's state scorecard? Areas that we might even be able to do better right here at home?
There's always room for improvement. You know, one of the things we would love to see Connecticut do more consistently is collect health data that includes questions about sexual orientation and gender identity for youth, particularly with respect to gender identity, that the data hasn't been consistently collected by the state, and we would like to see that participation. We'd also like to see the state make it easier for people when they are using single gender restrooms. So, you know, think about if you go into a coffee shop, there is a restroom that only one person can be in at a single time. We'd like for those all to be gender neutral, so people aren't trying to figure out what bathroom are they allowed to use, not allowed to use. It's really great for non-binary folks, but it's also great for caretakers of young children or people who need additional assistance using the restroom.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us this morning, Sarah, and I will certainly be digging deeper into the statistics and hopefully circling back with you at some point later in the year to talk a little bit more in concert with maybe a couple of the very proactive organizations that we have within the family of our radio stations and communities that we serve here in Connecticut. But in the meantime, it was a great education and a great resource to be able to pass on to everyone in all of the communities that we serve. We appreciate you for doing that. Sarah Werbelow is the legal director for the Human Rights Campaign and its foundation. The foundation is the educational arm of America's largest civil rights organization working to achieve equality for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people. HRC envisions a world where LGBTQ people are embraced as full members of society, at home, at work, and in every community. It was wonderful to hear that the State Equality Index that was published by the organization and the Equality Federation put Connecticut among 19 states getting the highest rating for protecting LGBTQ people and their families from discrimination, working toward innovative equality, but more work to do, as we heard. Sarah, once again, we thank you for your assistance this morning. And if you'd like to find out more, folks, just go to hrc.org and click on the box for the state scorecard if you'd like to look at how Connecticut compares to others. Sarah, thank you for now, and we'll talk to you again. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.